Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for December 18th, 2009.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
This week, we'll tell you how vigorous exercise could stave off Parkinson's disease, why it might be a bad idea to mix alcohol with caffeine, and whether people's Facebook profiles reflect what they're really like. But first, Suzanne Bard has a story about the oxygen-defying brains of my favorite creature, the naked mole rat.
Without oxygen, most mammals would suffer brain damage or even death within a few minutes, but not the naked mole rat. Neuroscientists John Larson and Thomas Park studied these ugly little rodents at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Larson says their brain cells are unmatched in their ability to withstand oxygen deprivation, also known as hypoxia.
So a mouse would normally survive only about 2 to 3, 4 minutes, and naked mole rats could survive much longer than that, 15 to 20, sometimes even 30 minutes long.
Naked mole rats live in crowded underground colonies where oxygen is scarce. Larson says another place oxygen is scarce is inside the mammalian womb.
It appears that the brains of these animals may not have developed to the same extent that other mammal brains do. We know already that brains of neonatal animals, including humans, are more tolerant to hypoxia than adult animals are. And so it may be that there's a retention of a kind of juvenile characteristics in these naked mole rat brains that allows them to survive hypoxia.
Larson says that when people suffer a stroke, the blood supply to parts of the brain is cut off. This can lead to brain damage because blood carries oxygen to brain cells. He thinks understanding the mechanisms that allow naked mole rats to survive in low oxygen environments could lead to better treatments for stroke victims.
Thanks, Suzanne. Now for some more brain news. As we age, we lose brain cells that produce a chemical called dopamine. Fortunately, most people have plenty to spare. But if too many of these cells die off, around 80% of them, telltale signs of Parkinson's disease can result. Symptoms include muscle rigidity and tremor. But neuroscientist Judy Cameron of the University of Pittsburgh says that exercise could slow down or even prevent this process.
We had been looking at effects of exercise on the brain for a number of years and had found that exercise has surprisingly large effects on brain function and brain structures.
She and her colleagues taught a group of monkeys to run on a treadmill for 5 hours a week over the course of 3 months, the same way a human might embark on an exercise program. Another group of the monkeys were allowed to sit on the treadmills for the same amount of time but didn't exercise. The monkeys were then exposed to a toxin that normally destroys dopamine-producing cells, causing mild Parkinson's symptoms. But none of the monkeys that exercised vigorously developed these symptoms.
If they ran at that level for 3 months before toxin exposure, their brains were very protected. We saw almost no effect of the toxin on dopamine neurons, and we saw absolutely no functional impairment after the toxin. Whereas the sedentary animals, they got to sit on the treadmill every day, but they weren't running. They had mild tremor, slowness of movement.
She says a third group of monkeys were partially protected by simply walking regularly for 3 months. The researchers think exercise could have similar anti-Parkinson's benefits for people, too.
We can have a monkey exercise in a way that would be prescribed for a middle-aged person for improving health. And then if we see effects in the brain of that level of exercise, you can really translate the findings in the animal to the findings in people very easily. We would advocate that everybody exercise, not just because it will make your heart healthier and help you control your body weight, but because it will really help your brain.
She says the findings back up anecdotal evidence that runners have a reduced rate of Parkinson's disease. Next, Suzanne looked into how well Facebook profiles reflect our true personalities.
Hundreds of millions of people keep in touch through social networking sites like Facebook. But do our online personas reflect who we really are, or does the internet allow us to reinvent ourselves? University of Texas Austin social psychologist Sam Gosling and his colleagues had volunteers take personality tests and also had their friends describe their personalities.
And then we took their Facebook profiles and we got other people to form impressions on the basis of their Facebook profiles alone. those perceptions corresponded pretty strongly with what the targets are really like, especially for some traits. They didn't do it for everything. They got some of them wrong, but they got a lot of it right. And I was surprised by the degree of accuracy found in their perceptions.
He says it may be hard to fool anyone on Facebook because there's a high degree of accountability between social contacts who interact regularly online.
It's one of those findings where on reflection you realize it would be quite hard to pull off a major ruse, to really pull the wool over other people's eyes. There are several reasons why it's hard to do. And one of the reasons is very high accountability on the website. So, you know, I could try to claim to be a world-class gymnast, but I wouldn't be able to get away with it because all my friends would say, no, you know, you can't even do a cartwheel, let alone be, you know, world-class gymnast.
In related research, Gosling wanted to find out if we can form accurate impressions of people based on a photograph alone. He and his colleagues took both candid and posed photos of volunteers and assessed their personalities. He then asked strangers to look at the photos. Their first impressions turned out to be a surprisingly accurate reflection of what the volunteers were really like.
They're not perfect. They're far from perfect. But they're a whole lot better than chance, especially for traits like extroversion. Extroversion came through pretty strongly. You could even judge traits like people's openness and their likability and their self-esteem. Even those sorts of things came through just from a photograph.
He says people were much better at accurately assessing personality from candid photos than from posed ones.
So if you have a very standardized photograph where people are not able to express their personality or posed photograph, those ones do provide some information. Impressions based on those photos tend to be accurate for traits like extroversion and even self-esteem comes through. But if you want to learn about other traits, then you can look at a more impromptu photograph. Then you can learn a whole lot about people. A lot of people's traits come through in the sort of spontaneous photographs.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. New alcoholic drinks that contain caffeine are extremely popular with young people. In the journal Behavioral Neuroscience, Temple University researcher Thomas Gould reports that the concoctions could lead to trouble. In his study, mice learned to avoid certain parts of a maze that contained unpleasant stimuli. Drunk mice forgot which parts to avoid, but were too drowsy to explore. But mice given both alcohol and caffeine barged through the maze and kept stumbling into the unpleasant areas. Gould is concerned about what this could mean for humans.
So people may feel less drowsy, assuming that they're less drunk. But in reality, cognitive processes are still impaired, and so that may lead to poor decision-making in the sense because they're underestimating how drunk they are.
Meaning a drunk person may decide to drive or engage in other risky behavior when they should be sleeping it off. Finally today, Suzanne has some interesting animal news.
Is there such a thing as being too sexy? There is if you're a female fruit fly. Scientists at the University of California, Santa Barbara, found that large-bodied female fruit flies attract so much attention from dancing, singing males that they never get a moment's rest, even to eat. As a result, they get weaker and lay fewer eggs. The research suggests that the male fruit fly's single-mindedness actually hurts the fly population, since the alpha females spread their genes less effectively. In other animal research, scientists report in the journal Current Biology that veined octopi stack up halves of coconut shells that are just the right size for hiding in. Then they spread their bodies over the top so that their feet point down around the edges and trot off with their collection. The researchers say it's the first case of an invertebrate animal collecting tools for later use.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's all we have for you this week. But if you can't wait for next week's podcast, you can get a daily dose of science by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. And remember, if you have a science question for us, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you'll win one of our brand new Science Update mugs. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.